Oh, hey, I'm Coco, and welcome to our talk show, Single and Too Tired to Mingle. We'll be talking about relationships with ourselves, our exes, our kids, and other important beings. So stay tuned. All right. Hi, everyone. We have such an amazing and interesting speaker here today, Dr. G.
Hey.
He is an author, speaker, ordained minister, producer, and so much more, as we'll see. So welcome. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Coco.
You're welcome. Oh, so you're originally from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, yes.
And you now live in London.
Yes, I do.
So welcome to London.
Thank you.
How are you finding it so far?
It's good. You know, I mean, don't want to complain too much about the weather.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not quite a Londoner yet. Yeah, you need to complain about the weather to be a proper Londoner.
Not quite yet. But yeah, it's good. It's been good.
Okay. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Are you staying long?
Am I staying on?
Yeah.
Yes, it appears so.
Okay, very good.
It appears so. Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. Yeah. So this show, Tuesday Talks, as you know, is about relationships. So we're going to start off with that. Yeah. And much as I've managed to avoid being married, you have been married several times. Granted, through a bit of series of unfortunate events.
That's right. That's right.
Which we'll talk about today. And we're going to start, actually, we're going to focus on your first marriage.
Yes.
Through which you wrote a book as well, which is called The Journey Interrupted.
That's right.
So why don't you kind of walk us through that a little bit, tell us how you met your first wife and a little bit about her, and tell us why the journey was interrupted.
Yeah, you know, thank you for that introduction. Awesome introduction. Now, let's get down to that first question.
Yeah. All right.
Now, my first wife's name is Pam, and I do want to refer to her as Pam because she was such an important person in my life. Yeah. I described the meeting with Pam as quite destined. Right. It was a destined meeting. And I'll tell you why I call it a destined meeting. Mm-hmm. I used to work for a major financial services company.
Right.
And at the time, I was in Tysons Corner, Virginia. For people that are familiar with the United States, they will know that that's in the close to the D.C. metro area. So I used to work there. And then the company decided that they needed to branch out
right.
to several states, several places in the United States. Okay. And I was told initially that I was going to be going to San Francisco.
Right.
And at the time, I had never been to the West Coast.
Okay.
I'd been on the East Coast for several years, loved it. But I'd heard so many things about the West Coast. So I was excited that, yeah, I get to go to San Francisco. That's so nice. But lo and behold, at the very last minute, when I say very last minute, I'm saying a day before right. I was about to travel, I got a phone call that morning and said, hey, I'm so sorry, Mr. Martins. We have decided to switch your flight to Phoenix, Arizona. And the
and not the, what you want to hear, right?
No, not at all. I had nightmares. I had heard horror tales about Phoenix, about Arizona. And I said, oh, no. And the person that was supposed to go to Phoenix has now been transferred to go to San Francisco. Lucky guy.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
I found myself.
Okay.
It was March. I remember the month right. specifically because it had been snowing in the Virginia area the very morning that I left to go to Phoenix.
Okay.
And so I landed in Phoenix with my coat, you know, not even thinking to check the weather.
Yeah,
how was the weather
yeah.
going to be like in Phoenix? It was awesome. Mm. It was 70 degrees, nice, bright, sunny. And so my first impression was like, yes, okay.
Okay.
Now the next one had to do with expanding their office there in Phoenix. There was already a manager that was already in the office, and I was supposed to assist him.
Right.
And so very quickly, I think I got there on a Friday. On Monday, work began right away. And midweek, we started hiring people because the goal was to hire about 30 representatives and get the office going. And then after that job was done, I would be transferred to another city.
Right.
So here I was in Phoenix, Arizona. And again, as I said, my first impression was good with the weather. The people that came to pick me up at the airport were really nice people. In fact, I stayed with them during all my time in Phoenix.
Right.
And so on Monday, we got to the office and, you know, a couple of days later, it was time to start interviewing people that that wanted the position.
Right.
One of the people that came in was a young lady called Pam.
Okay, here we go, Pam. Little did she know.
Little did she know. I got to tell you, there was something about her when the first meeting. And now I know some people may say, well, people don't fall in love at first sight and all that stuff. For me, it was just the look in her eyes. I knew, and this was strange. It was a feeling of just being comfortable, a feeling of almost deja vu, in fact, as if we've known each other before. I just felt a sense of comfort, as if I've known you before.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't tell her that because I didn't want to freak her out.
That would have been kind of weird thing to say at first interview.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to freak her out. So, but the feeling that I had was, gosh, I feel like I've known you before.
Okay.
One thing led to another. Yes, she was hired. Yes, you can imagine.
I wonder why. She had a good CV.
Yeah. She did. She actually did. And so we started to work together.
Yeah.
I was assigned as the person that would train her and the person that would kind of help her through the process of becoming a full-scale financial advisor.
Right.
And so, man, what a...
How quickly she became that.
And obviously, as time went on, we became friends.
Yeah.
And it turned from a professional to friendly and personal because Pam lived in Arizona. She'd been there for a few years. She knew all the places to go. And so Pam and I would just go to the different sites in Phoenix. And it was wonderful. It was, and the relationship grew and grew and grew, and we became the bond became stronger. And I began to you're smiling. I began to understand the feeling of, wow, I feel like I've known you before. I feel like I've known you before. And because as time went on, those feelings actually became reality. As I got to know her, I began to see the kind of person that she was, just a very unique and special person. Hey, as things were getting really stronger between Pam and I got another phone call. Hey, it's now time. You've done a good job in Phoenix. Thank you. We have met our goal of the number of representatives that we want. The office is doing well. It's now time for you to go.
But were you going out with Pam already?
I was already going out with Pam.
I just have a question.
Yeah.
Is it legal or frowned upon to be dating someone who's actually below you in the same company?
In the same company? Well, yeah, but the rule was not so, at the time, it wasn't like you cannot date.
Right, okay.
And, you know.
It's in place in some places.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It wasn't a hard rule that you cannot date. In fact, one other manager and another one had gotten together and dated and got married.
Right.
Manager. Okay. So, yeah. It would have been tough for them to say, "Well, you cannot date." So, So that was good. And, you know, I got the phone call. Well, it's now time to go to Chicago.
Okay.
Oh, boy, I didn't want to go.
Right.
I'm like, I want to stay in Phoenix. Can I?
Was the wind too much?
I was having too much fun. It was so good. But lo and behold, it was time to leave Pam behind.
Oh, no.
And go to Chicago for some time.
Okay. So you actually left to go to Chicago.
I actually left.
Right.
Yeah. And went to Chicago. However, Pam did accompany me on the long drive 2 to 3 days drive, by the way, from Phoenix to Chicago.
And she couldn't move with you?
She couldn't. Pam was from Iowa. If you're familiar with the United States, that's in the middle. Okay. It's right in the middle, Midwest of the United States. She had grown up, gone to college in Iowa. She actually fled Iowa because she wanted to be somewhere sunnier, more cosmopolitan. Okay. And so Chicago was too close to Iowa.
Right.
Chicago is Chicago is also in the Midwest. And so I could not convince Pam to move with me to Chicago. But we had a plan. We had a plan.
What was that plan?
Well, the plan was that sooner or later, I would either return to Phoenix or somehow I may be able to twist her hand to move to Chicago. That was the plan.
Right. And so what happened in the end?
Yeah, so we just
went where?
Well, well, the plan was, the way it worked out was I eventually left Chicago.
Okay.
And this was maybe almost a year later. And so we did
back and forth, long distance relationship,
which I found can be good.
Okay.
Can be, you know.
So how long
absence,
was the long?
Yeah. Absence makes the heart
as long as
grow fonder.
Too absent. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I say
fine line.
It is. That's why I say actually, I like to say absence can make the heart grow fonder.
Yeah,
it can. But as you know, there's another side. Too much absence, as you say.
Heart wanders.
Can lead to shenanigans. So yeah, that's not good.
Exactly.
The heart wanders,
So at some point, you wanted to marry her.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I knew. Again, as I said, when I met Pam for the first time, I knew. I said, this is it. I mean, it's her. No question whatsoever. Yeah. And in her mind, As we grew to know each other, there was no question in Pam's mind as well. Yeah,
okay.
It was. Oh, of course. It's like, oh yeah, no question.
So what happened?
So,
were there any obstacles in this?
Well, you know,
in this it's, adventure.
Yeah. You know, we were an interracial couple.
Okay.
Pam was German background. Of course, when she told her dad, who had been first generation.
I was going to say,
first generation, yeah. She told her dad, well, I met a great guy. Oh, of course, dad was excited. By the way.
There's a catch.
By the way, dad, he's black. What? Now, I don't know, there's an actor, his name is, a black American actor, his name is Sidney Poitier, and there was a movie that he played this role in called Guess Who's Coming
That's
Home.
That's such an amazing movie, actually.
You saw it?
Yeah, I've seen
Guess
it.
Who's Coming Home to Dinner.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, Pam's dad said, this man ain't coming home. This man ain't coming home to dinner.
No. There was actually a law until 1962, which is quite recently, if we look at it, right? That interracial couples were actually not allowed to get married in Arizona.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's like,
I mean,
not that long ago.
That long ago. It's really crazy. I mean, that those kind of laws made it into the
books.
Actual law. Yeah. I mean, what is crazy is this. Pam and I met in the 90s, right?
Right.
Even though, yes, the law was eradicated already by the time Pam and I met, the hearts of people still remain the same. So the law did not change the heart.
Yeah, that's it. It takes a while.
Yeah,
for it takes a while to catch up.
Yeah. So it took a while for Pam's dad and perhaps a couple of others to catch up. Most of the people that we interacted with, friends and all that, they were great.
Yeah.
Even Pam's mom was great.
Oh, okay.
Many of her sisters, no problem.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that everybody had no. I mean, some people may have had problems where they, you know, it was kind of secret.
Sure.
But as far as our true friends, I mean, they were all, I mean, they saw the obvious love and bond that we shared. It was, yeah, it was that good.
Okay, so you didn't get her father's approval, yet you still married her.
Yeah, I did because her father had actually said to her that, hey, it's funny, Pam was actually one of dad's favorite daughters. Right. Yeah, seven daughters.
Right.
Yeah, and Pam was one of the favorite daughters. And Pam was kind of like her father, stubborn in her own way.
Right. Okay.
And so when Dad said, hey, don't bring that fella home, you won't get any of my inheritance.
Right.
And Pam said, that's fine.
Pam. Go, Pam.
She goes, that's fine. Yeah, I've made the choice. Yeah, yeah. I've made the choice, Dad. I've made the choice. Yeah.
So what made the dad so resistant?
A good question. Yeah. Tradition. Later on, here's what I found out. I found out that many years ago, when his name is Bill, mm-hmm. when he was in World War II as a soldier, mm-hmm. He had fallen, and he says a black soldier walked past without helping him.
Okay.
And that really hurt him.
Right.
And unfortunately for him, he extended the pain that was caused by one man to millions of black people, including me.
Right. It just shows you, right, how important just basic human interaction is.
Yeah.
And what lasting negativity, I guess, it can harbor, right? And also the other way around, I'm sure, right?
Oh,
if it helped him, maybe the situation would have been different.
Absolutely. Right. Maybe, yeah. But that's what he said. And that's where the bias originated. And perhaps there were other things down the line, I don't know. But that's where it originated, according to him.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys were married for a long time.
Yeah, yes, we were.
Before he came around. So you never interacted with him that whole time?
I never did.
How many years was that you didn't interact
It was almost, I would say, almost 9 or 10 years that I never interacted with him.
Wow.
Because what happened was this. We had a first child, and he had no problems. He loved my first son.
Wow.
Yeah. Pam would go to Iowa, of course, without me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would be a bit sad.
I was going to say, how hurtful is that for you?
Yeah, yeah. I felt a bit sad that I would have to stay behind. But I told Pam that I didn't want any friction, any more friction with her dad. And you know, she could go ahead and take the boys. We had another son after the first one. So two boys, and they both went to Iowa. They lived on a 400-acre farm.
Wow.
So it was like paradise,
horses
and farmland that went on and on and on. Wow. So and a river running through it.
No way.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful, beautiful. So my boys enjoyed going to Iowa.
Yeah,
with
I can
their
imagine.
Mother.
Yeah, they
did. But again, I stayed behind
for 10 years.
And then, something happened. And the something that happened was this: Pam's nephew was getting married, not in Iowa, but in Montana.
Right.
Montana is northwest.
Is that significant that it wasn't in Iowa?
Actually, no. It was just because they lived in Montana.
Right.
Yeah, he lived in Montana. So the marriage was set up in Montana. Montana is northwest of the United States. Mm-hmm. And so we were all invited. This nephew, I knew him very well. He'd been to Arizona, so I liked him. It was great. I was happy for him. Mm-hmm. And so Pam said, yeah, you know, my nephew's getting married and we're going to go to Helena, Montana. I said, great. Oh, my dad's going to be there as well. I said, well, I'm not sure I really want to go. She goes, oh, no. Yeah. I mean, this is not Iowa. This is Montana. This is not his turf.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. If that's significant. So he wasn't at home.
Yeah, he wasn't at home. This is not his turf. And I've been to Montana before anyway. So she twisted my arm and said, hey, listen, you know, just you need to see my dad.
Yeah.
At some point, you need to see my dad. I said, okay, all right, no problem. So we drove to Montana.
Okay.
And I can remember, you know, as we were driving to the house where I knew I was going to meet him. And I was like, oh, boy. man.
Sweating a little bit.
Yeah. What's this going to be like? What's this going to be like? You know, anyway, so it was the first time of meeting Bill was uneventful.
Right.
I was actually surprised to see when I saw him that he was still a very handsome guy. He was in his 80s, okay. early 80s. I mean, he had the bluest eyes. Yeah. And he was just, I mean, for his age, when he shook my hand, I felt like he was a 30-year-old shaking my hand. Okay. Strong, firm grip. Okay. Again, this guy was a farmer. So,
right.
yeah. So he was strong. Yeah. He was strong. And I was impressed. I greeted him respectfully, sir. You know, nice to meet you, sir, I said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he shook my hand. I said, it's nice to meet you. And we sat down. There were other people in the room. Didn't really have much of an interaction
right.
with him on that first day. However, it was now the second day, time to go to the wedding. The wedding was held outside. You know, outside. It was nice, but they had been due on the grass. Mm-hmm. And we had sat the whole wedding party from the groom side sat at a particular place. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, they wanted to move us to another place.
Right.
I happened to be sitting next to my father-in-law. Mm-hmm. And as he was getting up, because of the grass that was wet, he was about to slip and fall. And so I grabbed him very quickly and stopped him from falling. Wow. And he looked in my eyes and he nodded. Didn't say thank you.
He made me cry. Yeah.
He didn't say thank you. He didn't say whatever. Wow. He just looked in my eyes and went like this. He nodded.
How history repeats itself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He just nodded.
Wow.
Yeah. And so guess what? Yeah, the wedding was great. We drove back home to Arizona. Next day, my mother-in-law calls Pam and says, what did G tell? What did he say? What did he say to Bill? They hardly said a word. Yeah. And she asked me, did you say anything? No, I hardly spoke to him.
Yeah.
And he has totally changed his mind wow. about him, you know. And you know what it was about? He said that I could have allowed him to fall
right, okay.
because he knew that I'd heard some of the things that he had said about me.
Right. Okay.
And so, yeah. so he said,
was conscious of that.
Right? Oh yeah, he was conscious of that. And he said, "Well, I could have let him fall, but I didn't."
Oh, sweet.
And that's okay. when the change began. Okay. That's when the change began.
Interesting.
Yeah. And our relationship took a different turn
wow.
after that one incident. That one incident.
Quite amazing, huh?
Yeah. And good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
Good
yeah.
for him. Good for yeah. him. Because again, as I said, he was maybe 84 years old at the time that I met him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Good for him. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of like a happy ending there.
Well, yeah.
But now we have another ending that took another turn.
It took
another. So tell us what happened with Pam after that.
Yeah. So again, some time went by and then Pam began experiencing headaches.
Right.
These headaches came out of nowhere, I felt. Initially, we thought it was just, just regular headaches. Mm-hmm. Take paracetamol. We had Tylenol back mm-hmm. in the States. Yeah. Take Tylenol, headache medicine, and you're okay. Well, first day, second day, the pills didn't work.
Right.
And so we went to the to her doctor. And so he said, well, you know, ladies usually have migraines, and it could be that this is migraine. So we'll prescribe a strong
right.
Medication. Well, she took that medication, but guess what? Things got even worse. There was a day that she was in such severe pain that I had to rush her to the ER. And again, she was admitted for a day. Guess what? After checking her out, another doctor said, well, I think it's just severe headaches, because headaches, these migraines, can last for weeks. And so they prescribe another medication. Well, guess what? Of course, it wasn't migraines because the headaches did not stop. They continued, which led us to go to yet another doctor. It was the third doctor that said, has anyone thought about her having an MRI?
Yeah.
And yeah, which he thought that I mean, yeah, logical, right? We said, no one. Yeah. And so he said, we need to get an MRI done right now.
Okay.
They got the MRI done. He gave me a call and said, you need to rush her to, this was Barrow's Neurological Institute, because there's something that is unusual that the MRI picked up.
Wow.
And so here I am with Pam. We don't know what's going on, but I'm rushing her to this Neurological Institute. And we get there. She gets admitted. They take a closer look. And after a few hours, the surgeon came out and said, wow, Mr. Martins, I am so sorry. I said, what? She goes, what she has is one of the most deadly forms of brain cancer.
Wow.
There's a tumor on the right side of her brain the size of a golf ball.
Wow.
And I'm so sorry. The prognosis is maybe 3 months.
Wow.
And so we went from, oh, it's just a headache, might be a migraine, to something that was so deadly.
And how old was she at the time?
She was 37, 8, something like that.
And how old were the kids?
Yeah, the kids were very young at the time. Our first son was 5.
Wow.
And our other son was 3.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it was devastating. Pam and I looked at each other and we thought, wow, is this some kind of horrible nightmare? What is this? But it was true. And they had to operate and take as much of the tumor out as they could, knowing very well that it was a fast-growing tumor and it would come back. And so it was with all this, her parents were told, sisters were told, and her dad, for the first time, came to Arizona.
Okay.
Yeah, under those circumstances. However, if what hadn't happened in Montana, where we were able to, he was able to let go of the bias, if that hadn't happened, it would have been difficult for him to have come to Arizona to see us in our home.
Wow.
Yeah, but the door had been opened, and so he was able to at least see Pam be a comfort to her.
So she was at home, not in the hospital?
She had been discharged from the hospital.
Right.
They had done the first surgery. She was okay for some time after the first surgery because they had taken 99% of the tumor that was causing all the problems. They had taken it away again, but the cancer, again, was one that was just a fast growing. They knew that it was only a matter of time before the cancer came back. And so, but there was a period of time she was fine. When I say she was fine, I mean, we were able to travel. She was able to work.
Wow.
We worked together. We had a business together. Okay. Yeah. So we worked together and she was able to work. She was able to take care of the kids. We were able to talk honestly.
Did you tell the kids?
It was difficult. Tiny, so, yeah. It was difficult. It was difficult to tell them, what was going on. Yeah. I did tell them later, but in the beginning it was difficult.
Yeah.
It was difficult to cross that bridge. Very difficult.
So yeah. How did you handle that?
Oh, it was tough. It was tough. A couple of ways. I'm a man of faith, so I went back to my faith, which is God is in control, which is prayer, which is meditation. Because through meditation, the soul gets strengthened. Right. And this is where I personally had to gain my strength. Through time of solitude and meditation and prayer. And in fact, there were times that I would get up early in the morning, like 5 a.m., get on my motorcycle and ride up to the mountaintop. I'll ride up to a mountain, right, and a place of solitude. I wouldn't see anybody, just me. So I'll park my bike and walk up to the mountaintop and scream as loud as I could. Just scream out and let it all out. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the things that I did. It was just a release. I did that. I would do that several times. I had affirmations that I would speak over, mm, over and over again to encourage myself, you know, to say, stay strong, because I needed to stay strong. Why? Because Pam also, I was a strength for her.
I was going to say, did you allow her to see kind of your weaknesses, or that you were feeling the sadness and the stress of what she was going through? Were you able to show her that, or?
Yeah, there was a time. There was a time, mm-hmm, and one time where I broke down in front of her.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, I would get up very early, again, go to my quiet place, right, you know, do my prayers, do my meditation, do my affirmations, ride up on the mountain and scream and yell.
Yeah.
I would do all those things. But there was a time. There was a time, and Pam saw me, and Pam, I mean, you know, we married, the two of one. When one person is weak, the other should not be weak, yeah, as well. The other person should be a strength for the weak person. And so I tried as much as possible to be that strength, right, for her. And she saw that, mm-hmm, oh yeah. And I could see that was helping.
Yeah.
But there was a particular day we were having a conversation, and she said something to me that I just couldn't hold back my tears.
Right.
She says, you know, I just want to thank you for supporting me. And I pray for you that when I'm gone, you'll find someone that loves you as much as I do.
Wow.
I couldn't hold back. And I just started to, I lost it. And then I saw in her face that, oh wow, are you okay? Do you still have hope? I said, of course.
Oh wow, okay.
Always.
Right.
Always. I said, always. Always. I said, always. So that was the only time that, okay, I cried in front of her.
And
other times.
And she took that as actually you not believing that, yeah, she would get better, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, but after that, I kept, yeah, my tears. Wow. I kept my tears in the room outside on the mountain. Yeah. Yeah, even with some friends.
Was it at that time that you formed a men's group?
Yeah. So what happened, and the way the formal men's group was formed after Pam passed away.
Right.
However, while she was still alive, one of the things that I would do the bike that I rode was a Harley Davidson.
Right.
And so basically, here's how this kind of informal group started.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the Harley Davidson shop in Scottsdale, Arizona, just kind of gazing around and looking around at some tricked out bikes, right? So I was admiring this tricked out bike, and a fella came next to me and he started looking at the bike as well. And he says, wow, isn't she beautiful? I said, oh, man, wow, she's a beauty, man. And so we started talking.
Male bonding.
I know, male bonding. Yeah, I said, man, she's a beauty. You would think we were talking about some beautiful woman, but we were talking about a tricked out bike. And so I said, man, she's a beauty, man. Mm. And she goes, hey, what do you ride? So I told him, a Street Glide. He goes, oh, yeah, I ride, you know, a Heritage Classic. These are all kinds of Harley Davidson, yeah, bikes. And so anyway, so we began to talk. Somehow in that same conversation, I told him about, I said, yeah, you know, I'm really having a hard time right now. My wife is sick. She's got terminal cancer. And I mean, this was a guy I just met.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, man. Wow. You know, I got to tell you, just 6 months ago, I lost my daughter to liver cancer. She was only 34.
Oh, my God.
His name was Bob. I'm like, oh, Bob, I'm so sorry. He goes, you know what? Why don't we exchange numbers? There are two other guys that I ride with.
Right.
If you want, we can all ride together.
Okay.
That's where that relationship of male bonding. Okay. And so, yes, I took up the invitation. Mm. And so I met Bob and Bob's brother and another friend.
Right.
And so we would just ride together every now and then. During the riding, there will be conversations, open conversations of... Yeah, you know, I'm dealing with this. Hey, brother, you know, I understand. And so there was a bonding that happened between all these riders.
Okay.
Other people joined us as well as they saw the bonding, and it was really good because, I mean, everyone was dealing with different issues, and we were just able to share these things in that setting. So perhaps it was that kind of motivated me afterwards to set up a men's group, because men need to have time to share things with one another. There's some things that are particular to men that some may not even feel comfortable sharing these things with their wives, but they can share with another brother.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I found that out, you know, with a men's group that, wow, you know, there's so many intimate things that, I mean, some people say men don't cry. That's a lie.
I was going to say, do men cry?
Yeah, men do cry.
Yeah.
I've had guys bigger than me leaning on my shoulder in tears.
Wow.
Men do cry. Yeah, men do cry. Men have feelings. Men have a lot to say. Again, you know, the perception of the strong, silent male is overblown.
Yeah,
Is he
just holding things back?
It's just He's just holding things back. A lot of times when men get into what I call a sanctuary, a safe haven, where they feel like, yeah, my brother can understand. He's not going to judge me.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to criticize me. You know, he's not going to take it the wrong way.
Yeah,
those kind of things are important to me. And I found out in the men's group. That, you know, it's got to be a place where people can be open and honest and transparent and say, hey, listen, I'm going through this, I'm going through that. And, you know, hey, fellas, is there anyone else that may be going through this or words of advice from other, even if there are no words of advice, just the fact that there is a safe place where you feel that you can share things and not be criticized, not be judged. That's so important.
Mm.
So important.
I think, and this is something I touch upon in my book as well, I think everyone has similar issues.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, it's very hard to find a person that has an issue alone, just him or her, no one else.
Yeah.
So that's why these kind of tribes, I think, are so important.
Yeah.
Well, you do find your kind of soulmates and you can open up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
It kind of seems, listening to you, that a lot of things happen to you kind of spontaneously and naturally. and I think that kind of nowadays where, or maybe as we get older, I don't know, life is faster, you know, the tempo is quicker, especially in big cities.
Yeah.
Have we lost the ability to listen to our inner voice, or are we still in tune and in touch with ourselves? What do you think?
I think a lot of us have lost the ability to listen to that inner voice.
Right.
Now, of course, we are in a different kind of world today from the caveman.
Yeah.
So
we're talking about instinct. Basically,
instinct,
right?
Yeah. We're talking about instinct. We're talking about intuition.
Yeah.
We're talking about what I say is a God-given gift to everyone.
Yeah.
Everybody has that. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some, it may have been dulled and dusty.
Right.
However, it's still there to a certain measure.
Yeah.
What dulls the inner voice is other voices. We rely so much on, these days, we rely so much on Google technology. Mm. I'll give you a story. We were in LA at one time. There was road work where we were going. We were actually going back to our hotel. My wife said to me, turn right. The GPS said, turn left.
Oh, interesting.
She said, no, turn right. Guess who I listened to? I listened to her, and she was right. Because somehow the GPS, perhaps it was archaic at the time, maybe not the types that we have today in 2023, 24. But the GPS said, turn right. She goes, no, turn left. She says, no, turn right. I know.
Right.
And I listened to her. Why? Because over time also, I had learned to trust her instincts
right.
as well.
Okay.
And so, well, yeah, we're in a world, again, that we rely a lot on the internet, on technology, on all this. Now, these devices are great. However, they should not dull. We should not allow the devices to dull the inner voice. And the way that you can kind of allow the inner voice to speak is by following. Because the more you follow, the more you hear, and the more is that is affirmed. The less you follow, the less you hear. Because you're going to hear a voice for sure.
I was going to say, how do you wake this up if you're not used to listening to yourself?
The way to wake it up, I feel, is by taking a chance, right. or what I call, take a step of faith, brother. That's it. In my language, I say, take a step of faith, brother.
Okay.
Oh, but I may fall. So what?
Exactly.
Babies fall before they learn how to walk. They don't say, oh, I fall. Oh,
that's it.
That's it. Yeah, I'm done. Yeah. But we've lost that. I think we've lost that. So my words are, take a step of faith, brother.
Yeah.
And basically what that means is, you may fall. However, you will never really learn to go back to fine-tuning this inner voice and learning to discern, is this my inner voice speaking or is this some other voice? Mm. Because we are surrounded by voices.
True.
We're surrounded by voices. Even internally, we have different voices that are speaking internally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not to talk of the voices, the many voices everywhere. How do you discern which one is that inner voice, the true compass?
Yeah.
How do you discern? Well, learning, which means risk, which means, falling.
Yeah, I love that topic, actually. I think I love the topic of failure.
Yeah.
For me, and I teach my kids this as well, there's no such thing as failure. If something hasn't gone well, okay, so what? You either do it again or you just realize maybe that's not for you and you do something different.
Absolutely.
So I've always told them, I prefer that you do many different things and that's how you learn what you love to do.
Yeah.
But I also find that a lot of people that I also know is they don't try anything new and they don't push themselves because what if they fail? What do you think about that?
Yeah,
what's your stance on failure?
I am kind of like you on failure.
Is there such a thing?
To me, there's not such a thing as failure as long as you get up again.
I agree.
As long as you get up
that's
again.
That's it, yeah.
You know, there's a proverb by the wisest man, King Solomon. It says, the righteous man may fall 7 times, but he rises up again.
Mm.
Now, if you don't like Solomon, then say, well, you know, I don't follow Solomon. But
have someone else?
Yeah, there's someone else. You follow this rock group.
Yeah,
I think they call Top Thumping, I think is the name of the rock
okay.
group. It says they have a great song about falling down. Mm. And basically, I think the song goes like, I fall down, but I rise up again.
That's
it's basically using the same words of Solomon, you know, that I get knocked down. That's like, get knocked down.
Oh, yeah.
But you know that song. Yeah,
I do,
get
knocked
down. But I get up again.
That's
I get knocked down.
That's
life for us every now and then knocks us down. But guess what? the point is not being knocked down. We all get knocked down by different things in this life. But as the rock group says, you know, I get up again.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, it's like the trajectory is never going to go just up, right? Yeah. But as long as it's kind of going like this, it's all good. As long as you're not letting yourself go down that way.
Absolutely.
So if you're going up and down a little bit, it's fine. As long as, like, you know, absolutely, you're kind of pushing yourself up all the time.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at failure.
Failure, it's only failure if you don't get up.
Yeah. And it makes us stronger, I think. It makes you also realize what you do have when, you know, when times are good.
Absolutely. There's so much that is learned in what we call failure anyway. So, I'm not of that mindset that says, I have failed. No.
Yeah, exactly. No. I agree.
Yeah.
Very good. So that should be a key takeaway for our audience. There's no such thing as failure. Get up and go.
Yes, get up. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, let's return back to marriage again.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite topic.
Mine too. Okay, they call marriage an institution. Yeah. So it's called the institution of marriage. Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Is marriage easy? Is marriage hard?
Well, there's a reason.
Is it both?
It can be very hard. There's a reason why it's called an institution.
Okay.
Because when you think of an institution, the first thing that comes to mind for me is school.
Right.
A school of higher learning.
Right.
A school. So marriage to me is also a school.
Okay.
It's a school where we get to learn in a very, very, perhaps to me, the best soil possible for growth and learning.
Right.
You know, there is no better soil to learn more about you than in a relationship,
right?
You know, and marriage, be just because of the nature of what it entails, you know, for better, for worse, till death do us part, you know, that the vows that are taken in the marriage, that this is forever.
Yeah.
Nobody steps into marriage saying that, I'm just going to try it out for 2 months. Unless you're a bit crazy. Yeah. But most people, when they step into this institution of higher learning,
maybe that's what it should be called. We should rebrand it.
I'm telling you, I call it an institution of higher learning.
Yeah.
And what are we supposed to learn?
Yeah.
The first thing that we're supposed to learn is about ourselves,
right?
Because you will discover that you're not all that. Because all of us have areas of weaknesses, strengths. We discover the things that we need to work on.
Yeah.
Even what we call strength, we discover that, boy, we could do better.
Hmm.
You know, we can do better in this, you know. And so I think marriage presents the opportunity to learn about ourselves. And of course, as you learn about yourself, you also have the opportunity in that to learn about somebody else, so that it's not all about you. And we are not an island.
Yeah.
People do bring things to the table, good and bad.
Sure.
You know, it's a mixture. Yeah. You know, it's a if you want to call it a melting pot.
Smorgasbord.
Go ahead. Yeah, it's a buffet of different things, you know, that are brought to the table.
Yeah.
And I think that marriage presents the opportunity. So there's never, to me, a failed marriage. There's nothing like that.
Okay.
If somebody says, my marriage was a failure, I said, think again.
Yeah.
Think again. That's what I said.
That's a good...
Think again.
Good takeaway.
Think again about that. Think again. Yeah. You're supposed to learn about yourself and about others. So if you say that it was a failure, perhaps you failed to learn.
No.
Think again is what I would say to such a person. Think again.
That is a very strong message.
Yeah. Think again. It's an institution of higher learning.
I love that. And are people good at learning about themselves?
Well, you know, I mean, as in every school, you have good students. And you have students that come with a certain kind of attitude.
Right.
We all need to be better students. To learn, again, as I say, mostly about ourselves and then about others. And marriage gives us the opportunity to do both. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful institution.
Maybe I'll try it one day. I'll come to you for advice.
Absolutely.
Oh, all right, that was amazing. Would there be like a key takeaway or a message for our viewers and listeners that you would like to give us towards the end of this chat?
Yeah, well, you know, the key takeaway, because again, when I look at life, I realize that, yeah, most people can embrace what they call the good things in life.
Yeah,
we can embrace winning $1 million. Oh, wow, that's great. We can embrace job promotions. Oh, wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. We can embrace, we just had a baby. Yeah. All these things we say are good and we can embrace. However, we have difficulty in embracing the things in our life that we call a crisis, a tragic, problem. All these definitions we give them. We have issues embracing those. What I say is this, the takeaway is embrace all of life, because behind every crisis, there is an opportunity. Behind every crisis, there is an opportunity. You just got to look deeper. It's there. You just got to look deeper. And so...
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure hosting you, Dr. G.
Thank you so much. Thank
love
you so
all the
much,
words Dr. of wisdom.
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, we'll...
All right.
It's been what I have learned through the course of my life so far.
That's it.
So far.
That's it.
So far. There's more.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing your life so far. We might see you again.
You bet. You bet.
For the rest of it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for inviting
me. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Bye.